Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I'm feeling the orange skies and the purple glow, and I felt like a happy image of Baltimore Positive, despite the fact that, been a tough week in a lot of ways, and certainly for Orioles fans out there, Don Mohler, as we get going here on the recon, but we spent Monday on a golf course, right? Beautiful day out at Hayfields with Leonard Raskin and Raskin Global. Got off to a nice start, and I guess the Ravens are going to pick some football players, so we got to feel good about that. And then there was the thing that sort of shook the world, right? The George Floyd verdict and Derek Chauvin and all of the political fallout of that, which we'll cover here today, correct?
Well, it's been quite a week, and you're right. I think I spoke to former Baltimore County Executive Jim Smith just this week, and former judge, spoke to him really about his experience as a circuit court judge, about his thoughts when it was announced that the jury had reached a verdict in 11 hours. And my question for him was, at that point, Judge, did you know that it was pretty preordained that the verdict was going to be guilty? I thought it was interesting that Jim Smith indicated that he felt the verdict was going to be guilty the moment that Derek Chauvin decided not to testify. And his rationale as a judge who's presided over many, many jury trials was that in a case like that, where everyone has seen the crime, that it is imperative, not that he has to, his legal right not to testify, obviously, but that his chances of an acquittal or a hung jury are much better if he's able to get on the stand and give the jury some sense of the circumstances and his state of mind that led to what they've witnessed. And he said the inability to do that usually does not work out well for the defendant. So I thought that take was interesting. You and I had spoken for a couple of weeks now about the trial, and when it came across my phone that the verdict had been reached, I turned to Linda and I said, I think we're going to be able to exhale because he's guilty. And she said, well, why are you so sure? And my rationale was the same as almost everyone else's, that I was convinced that in that short, first of all, they couldn't be hung, right? Because if you had a hung jury, they'd have to come back in, tell the judge they were hung. He would then say, you haven't been out long enough. You need to go back and try again. The state's got a lot invested in this. Work harder. That did not happen. So you knew you didn't have a hung jury. And it was inconceivable to me that 12 jurors would have found him not guilty. So given that, it was pretty clear to me that they found the evidence overwhelming. I was glued. I actually had some place I was supposed to be, Nestor, and I rearranged that because I wanted to see the actual moment. And then I wanted to hear the analysis. And I was struck by the analysis. I'll get to that in a moment. But before I do, I'm just curious as to your reaction, because I think everybody's reaction was different.
Well, you thought it was a done deal. I felt like 9 hours of deliberation that this was going to go in the outcome it went. Every moment along the way, and I've mentioned this a lot over the last year and a half, my wife and I were trapped in a rainy hotel room in Seattle a year and a half ago. We were about to go out to Hawaii, and she loves To Kill a Mockingbird. And it happened to be
one of my favorites.
Happened to be on in the courtyard we were staying at, or the Aloft, whatever we were staying at in Seattle. We had some great pizza, And it just happened to be on in the middle of the day. It was college football and everything. And I fell back into it. And I hadn't seen it since Miss Monday taught it in 10th grade, you know, or whatever, you know. And my wife had always said to me, "Love, To Kill a Mockingbird." I think maybe one time along our marriage, she watched it, you know, while I was here and it was on. And I said, "Oh, To Kill a Mockingbird, black and white, Atticus, Jed, you know, the whole deal, right?" But that day I sat and watched it for the first time as a as an adult. I was 50 years old. The first time I watched it was I was 15 years old or whatever I was, right? But not anything that went back. I watched it and I sort of forgot how it was going to turn out because it's been 30 years. And to be really honest, Don, I didn't read the book. I read the Cliff Notes. I'm not going to lie to you. You know what I mean? I mean, I can't lie to my high school guidance counselor. So having sat in that courtroom experience and all of that and saw what happened there, I'm always – and O.J. Simpson, right? I mean, O.J. Simpson was – in front of everybody last week. Everybody had talked about that. The glove, all the nonsense. I didn't watch 15 hours of the movie. Did you watch the movie last year, right? Wasn't it a whole, like,
series? Oh, the miniseries? At a couple, yeah, 2 years. Absolutely did, sure.
See, I don't invest in that. I invested in the
Brown,
real thing.
Sterling K. Brown, you know, was
so having seen outcomes in this culture, especially if you're of color, right, of any kind, right, in this culture, there's never a done deal. We all saw the Bronco. We saw all of it, right? OJ's still looking for the murderer. I know this to be true because he told us. But so I never think anything's a done deal, Don. So was,
well,
there,
the
what was my reaction? My reaction was they got this one right in the same way that I look at a football call or basically anything and say, did you get it right or did you get it wrong? It's you know, the evidence is on video, all of that. And I see football calls that, like, it to me, here's the rule, here's the thing, here. I've seen juries, I've seen To Kill a Mockingbird, I've seen O.J. Simpson. So I never think, honestly, I never think it's in the bag, you know, that this is so clear cut. Because the dude's knee was on his neck for 9.5 minutes. Yeah. Everybody saw it, everybody saw what happened. And the defense still goes on a daily basis and tries to completely embarrass, debunk, do everything in its power, make the witnesses guilty, for crying out loud, right? Like, crazy,
well,
including wearing gloves and stuff, that is sort of like, now what was the prosecution thinking there, you know?
Well, I think it's interesting. You bring up some examples that I think sort of flip it on its head a little bit. Like the OJ thing is not the first one that would come to my mind, but I would say this, there is a connection in this way, in that in the OJ thing
go the way we thought it was going to go.
No. But in terms of the underlying issues here, what happened in the OJ case was the Los Angeles police ended up on trial. It ended up not being about OJ's guilt or innocence. It ended up being about the LA police. So
nothing ends anything like a sloppy prosecution, right? I mean, Theroux went through that last week, right? Literally.
Yeah, but I don't know that, again, I don't want to fixate on OJ. I don't know that it was a bad prosecution. Again, I think
I'm simply saying OJ is when everybody in the country was standing watching a trial, watching an outcome, and picking a side.
But
I can't think of anything in my life that there's been a side picked on. And
well,
believe me, there are plenty of people to pick the side of leave the cop alone. Leave all cops alone.
No, I don't think
there's plenty of people to pick the all cops. So leave.
I don't think there were this time. And that's where I think, and you know, along with many others, I've posted that I hope this is the beginning of a discussion and not the end. I think I've told this story before, and then I want to move past OJ to examples that I think were so front and center in all of the analysis the past week or so. And that is that I've mentioned that my dear friend Evelyn Chapman, longtime assistant superintendent in the Baltimore County Public Schools, one of my dearest friends, happened to be in my office when the OJ verdict came down, and they cut to that famous shot. I want to say, I think it was Howard University. Maybe it was Howard, may have been GW, of the African-American students cheering And it was probably one of the best 15 or 20 minute discussions that I've ever had about race to this day. And I'm an old guy. And
I was in a room of half black and half white people who didn't know each other in a public place when that happened.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that
Cleveland,
was probably
Ohio. I was in Cleveland, Ohio, in a Holiday Inn, in literally a bar restaurant brunch area with 250 people who packed in. It's 1994. There's no internet, right? You had to be in front of a television. If you worked in an office, there were no televisions, right? They all came down, and I had the reaction in the room of every white person going like this and every black person cheering.
Correct. And what Evelyn was so eloquently able to help me understand that day, and that's why I said, I hope this verdict is the beginning of discussions. She was able to help me understand that reflection wasn't so much about his, that reaction wasn't so much about his guilt or innocence. It was about a feeling that African Americans never get treated fairly by the police or by the American justice system. And so I think the fact the other day that there were pundits who were saying, I'm not going to celebrate this because this is one example. And
yeah, I didn't feel any sense of celebration.
Correct.
To me, justice is served and that's the way it should be.
Correct. Like, there was no the thing that got lost, Nestor, and where we need to have really important discussions, and I'm hopeful. I actually am hopeful that we can begin now to have some serious discussions about what policing should look like in the 21st century. And starting from a premise that the overwhelming majority, if not 90, as I say every week, somewhere in that range of the men and women who serve as police officers care and want to do the right thing. And it really becomes, I think, more about training and a discussion about what policing should look like.
But Tom, what can be done with a 13-year-old kid in Chicago? Because the first video is, oh my God, they shot a kid with his hands up.
And then you realize
he had a gun, he was running away from the cops, he ditched the gun and was shot within 0.8 seconds. Within 0.8 seconds.
Sure. Take the one that's even more recent than that is the
17-year-old girl on Bank Street, right? And we had real shootings in Eastwood. You remember the Jimmy Willie and the Roman Wells aunt? You remember Roman Wells aunt, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had real incidents that happened in my neighborhood when I was a kid. But I was a 13-year-old kid with a gun running away from the cops, and I did that, and I got shot. I don't know that my parents would have said, what are you doing there? And I know we're in a different age, and I know kids carry guns to protect themselves. I get all of that. But I watched that video, and one side of the political aisle and the other side of the political aisle use it all as a football. Val Demings was right. To me, that thing was a mess in Chicago.
All right, let's take the one in Columbus, Ohio, where there's a 911 call, a very, very irate, concerned, energized person on the other end saying, quick, come, we've got girls fighting, somebody's going to get killed. Police officer pulls up, we've released the body cam video already, and what you see is on this body cam is a young lady fighting with another young lady, pushing the young lady to the ground with a knife in her hand, appears to be getting ready to stab the other young lady. Police officer saying, drop it, drop it, drop it, doesn't drop it. Police officer shoots the young lady. Most of the people that I've seen interviewed about that say that particular case is the one that people have to step back and recognize how extremely difficult the job of the men and women who serve as police officers, how difficult that job is. Because if that officer hesitates and the young lady on the ground gets stabbed, the officer is going to be accused of not doing anything to protect that person. It's always about protect and serve. So It is a
toughest job on earth.
Very different, toughest job on earth. And we've got to make it easier. And that's going to be involving community activists. It's going to be involving people in the communities, police chiefs, FOPs, everybody sitting down.
Think about
down.
How much time we've dedicated on this program, right? To police efforts and police talks, whether it's Julian Jones, whether last week, FOP, we've done it all here.
But and Nestor, here's part of the problem, and this is why this walk is going to be such a journey. Let's go back again to the George Floyd case. What has not gotten much publicity? It's been an article or two, but not nearly what it should be to focus on the original police report from the afternoon of the incident. I would encourage people to go back, Google police incident report, George Floyd, and read it. And I will get it, not verbatim, but I'm going to be pretty close right now when I tell you what it said. It said, African-American male was stopped in a traffic stop this afternoon. He was combative and difficult when he was asked to step out of the car. The officers were able to restrain him when they discovered he was having some medical distress. They immediately called for an ambulance, and he was transported to the hospital where he was deceased. That was what was in the official police report. Now, we've seen the video since then and know that report was fiction. Without Darnella Frazier, the 17-year-old young lady who stopped and filmed the 9 minute and 52 seconds, that police report would have been what was the major piece of evidence in the trial. And my guess is we would have ended up with a hung jury or an acquittal again without Darnella Frazier's cell phone. So I think rightfully that what African-Americans particularly, but others who are concerned about social justice in the United States are asking is, why does it take irrefutable evidence to get the kind of justice that we should get? And again, Nestor, you always talk about history lessons. I mean, we need to go back. I mean, I was trying to think of the ones that I've learned about and studied, and it's all of our brains. You know, I was thinking of Emmett Till in August of 1955. Emmett Till was in a grocery store in I think it was Mississippi, grocery store, and he spoke to a white female. That was against the law. A few days later, he's dragged out of his house. He's beaten to a pulp. He's brutalized. He's lynched. And he's thrown in a river. He's thrown in a river. And when he's recovered, those men go on trial. They're acquitted. So that's the history. When people say, well, why are people so distrustful? That's the history. You go all the way back to the civil rights workers that I thought about. And remember very, very much in the 1964, Cheney, Goodman, and Schwerner, you know, the famous film with Gene Hackman, Mississippi Burning. They're civil rights workers on a freedom walk killed again in Mississippi. And the state refuses to prosecute. So the federal government comes in. 17 people are charged, or 18 people are charged, and only 7 are convicted. And they get minor sentences. So, and then we just go down the list, right? Eric Garner selling cigarettes. Tamir Goodman jogging through a neighborhood. I mean, we go on and on and on. So this is the beginning of a journey. Hopefully, it allows people to begin to have a discussion. Yes, we exhaled, but it goes on and on and on. And You know, we've got to say something has to change. It just, we can't wake up every day when another African American is being shot. And we can't, and you know why we can't do it for police officers either. I mean, one of the things that I hope happened is that we broke through the blue wall and that we're going to see this transition, hope springs eternal, where the good cops say the bad ones are bad for all of us. And you and I have talked, as you pointed out, Gun Trace Task Force ad nauseum. Very, very difficult for me to believe that a number of people in the Baltimore City Police Department did not know about Wayne Jenkins and his crew. It's just hard to believe, right? And they sort of looked the other way. So are we now going to get to a point where police officers say, for my own safety, we can't tolerate these bad apples? And we have to be able to say, as the president has said openly, we have a systemic issue. It's not a bad apple here and a bad apple there. We have to look at training. We have to go all the way back to the academies. You know, Nestor, I've been a proponent for a number of years. We've done some of this in Baltimore County, not to the extent that I'd like us to. I would love to see us create our own pipeline, to use a baseball analogy, our own minor league.
You're talking about some sort of ROTC?
Exactly.
Like yeah, okay,
With really top-level young men and women in cooperation with Dr. Kurt Nitus and the community college, where and with a lot of psychological training and social training, where
if you're a kid in the ninth grade thinks you want to, that's the way you want to serve, right? Why not go on a track to be able to do that, right?
And let's do it the right way. Make it a truly elite program where you come out and you come out with an AA degree on your way also to a full 4-year degree. You've been trained the right way, and that way,
What's a policeman expect? I almost should ask this more. Let's get Melissa Hyatt. It's been a year. You know, let's bring all
We're
the
glad to get Chief Hyatt back on. Sure.
Yeah, sure. Because I would say this, right? Like football players, it's draft week, right? And this maybe is a good little transition because we can go on and on with this. I won't talk baseball with you, I promise, on the rebound.
I thought we were going to. I'm going to tell you what's wrong with baseball.
We did that last week.
No, we didn't. We got cut short. So we are going to do what's wrong with baseball.
I would say this. When it comes to the Ravens picking football players and all that they're going through and all the psychological this we give and all the tape they had and tape they didn't have and all the other things that go on, every football player knows one thing, Don. That it's the NFL, not for long, right? Like that this is only going to be a 5, 6, 8, 10-year deal. I'd love to know that in your world, there is a 15-year-old boy or girl. They think they might want to maybe go to military, maybe serve. Don't want to be a doctor. Don't want to be a lawyer. They want to be, you know, in some sort of service, police in that track. But when they're young, you're saying school them up down at EVT, Dundalk, wherever, Colgate, start them, whatever, right? Now they come out community college, you send them over to Dr. Curtinitis, and they want to get on the force, and they're going to be a young police officer, 21, 22, 23. That's young, right? So they get on the force. How long do they expect to do that? Wear a badge, go into people's homes, break up. She's got a gun. He's got a gun. They got a drug. But
no, I think
when you
hope.
Say it's a policing career, do you think when I'm 45, when you go into the military and you say I'm going to have a military career, you still think of retiring at 38 or 42 or, you know, you don't.
Well,
I don't think you think of it as a 45 year career.
No,
to your point, to get the education part of someone, to get that part of it in, right, from a policing standpoint, would be when you're 45, you're going to do something else with your life. I would think about it that way.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it varies a little bit from subdivision to subdivision. But in Baltimore County, a police officer can reach full retirement. He or him or her can reach full retirement benefits in 25 years. So if you come on at 21,
you'll be late 40s, you're 50. I'm 52, dude.
Right.
And if it were over for me, if I went into that, and I would have been a hell of a different life, a much harder life. I get all of that. But, you know, if that's the reward, I'll hear that. You know, I mean, I don't know. I know with football, I know what the reward is. Your body's going
to
hurt.
We have to do that. And we can't, before we leave this subject, it does appear.
You want lifers. It's like teachers.
You don't want people
to be a 5-year cop.
No.
You want somebody to be all in, like you probably want your sports radio show guy to be.
And again, I can't stress enough the number of outstanding men and women that I've encountered in police departments all across the state.
Who have spent 20 and 30 and 40 years? We all know a cop that served 30 or 40 years.
My cousin was a major in the state police. Would you know, probably still be there had he not gotten sick. So he loved every day, and he was just outstanding. And we've known, you and I have known many outstanding police officers.
I told my wife about Mr. Bulk. Mr. Frank Bulk grew up across the street from me, went golfing. He worked out at the jail as he was an older man. But, man, he encouraged me. And I think I told you and Dr. Curtinitis this once, encouraged me to go to community college and get my degree when I was 11 years old. There wasn't a lot of that going on in Dundalk. I think you know that, right? And he was a police officer. And I forget what an impact he had on my life. Like, not even like an uncle, like more important in my life than an uncle would have been. You know,
he was a very influential
man, and a man that I confided in more than a priest, more than you as my guidance counselor. Frank knew a lot about me, but he was a cop. You know what I mean? And that meant something.
I would suggest that he's the rule, not the exception. And that's why it's so important. And that's why it was so encouraging to me, Nestor, that in the wake of this verdict, in the wake of all that's happened over the past year, that, you know, it looks like Republican Senator Tim Scott, the Biden administration, I think Senator Booker taking the lead on the Senate part, looks like they might actually be getting closer to a deal on the police reform, which Maryland, again, we said last week, so proud, Speaker Jones, President Ferguson, all the great work they did. We'll be speaking to Delegate Pat Young shortly about the great work they did in that area. But it looks like the Senate might be able to reach a compromise, and we might actually get a police reform bill, a bipartisan bill in the United States Senate. It looks like they're hung up on this issue, and you and I have talked with many about this issue of unqualified immunity and whether or not you can sue police officers in civil court for actions. And it looks like that what Tim Scott is proposing, and I'm intrigued by it. I think you have to give. I'm not a big fan of unqualified immunity, but it looks like Senator Scott wants to compromise in the sense that would allow folks to sue departments as opposed to individual officers. His argument evidently being that would really hold departments accountable. It would make it incumbent upon them to make sure that their officers are trained in the right way so that they're not writing huge checks down the road. And his sense is that would make a real difference. That if I were in the United States Senate, I would listen to that compromise, because I think you don't always get exactly what you want. I'd be open to that. And I can't leave the topic before we close up briefly with a little baseball. We got to have a little levity every week, right? But that, again, I look back to the decision that Baltimore County Executive Kevin Kamenetz made 3 years ago when he overruled his own police chief, well-meaning. His chief was well-meaning. The FOP, the commission, who wanted to go slow and wait and do a small pilot on body cameras. And County Executive Kamenetz said, it doesn't feel right to me. I think things are evolving in a way that we need to get out in front, and we need to spend the money, build it into the budget, and expand body cameras 100% in Baltimore County. And you look back at how visionary that was. And now here you've got the state of Maryland going to require every county in every locality to have a body cam program. You know, I was shocked at some of the larger counties that still did not. So again, tip of the hat to my friend, left us much too soon, Kevin Kamenetz. He saw it, as he often did. He could see what was coming down the road and think of how different. Like just again, go back to that Columbus, Ohio example. Without that officer and that body cam footage showing that young lady getting ready to stab another young lady, that case would be very, very difficult. So my plea to folks out there listening to Baltimore Positive, let's have the discussions. Let's not be afraid of race. Let's not be afraid to talk policing. Let's not be afraid to talk about what a different form of true community policing might look like. So
we all talked about what fairness is this week, right?
And fairness. A little baseball, Nestor. Every week, I said, you know, last week you were saying that, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with baseball. Let me tell you, somebody sent me an article this morning, and it blew me. I mean, you're a stat guy, and you this stuff, you're like a savant with this. I looked at these stats, and I did a double take and immediately sent them to my gang and said, guys, look at these stats. What do you think the average major league batting average is as we head into, what do we guess? We're now in the third or fourth week of this. Oh, you saw the article.
Is that right?
Did you see the article?
No, I didn't see the article.
They're actually, well, that's pretty crazy. It's actually 232. That is 5 points lower than the single season worst ever in Major League Baseball. Since the year 1900, Nestor, since 1900, just 11 teams have batted 220 or worse for the season. Right now, we have nine, which is basically one-third of the teams in the major leagues, are on a pace to bat under 220 for the year. I mean, it's really, really strange. I don't know that the answer is to move the mound back a foot like they're doing in the Atlantic League. I worry a little bit about, we got enough arm problems as it is, but I've watched enough guys, Nestor, catching short pop-ups in the outfield and taking balls that are 112 miles an hour, exit velocity, and catching them in a hole between second and first or a second and third and throwing the guy out. The change that I would make immediately would be I would pass a rule that infielders have to be on the dirt, in the infield, and you have to have two infielders on each side of second base. I would end the shift. I think that would immediately do more for offense than moving the mound back a foot. And it's so funny. I know I am in the minority on the seven inning games. I know you hate it. I know most of my baseball friends hate it. I would go
feel like baseball.
Well, I would go further. I would actually go further. And I know, be a big asterisk. We'll wrap it up here. I would go further. We can talk about this later. I would change all games to seven innings. Oh. And here's my right. Sleep on it for a week. Here's why. Back in the Jim Palmer era, the Sandy Koufax, guys pitched 7 and 8 innings. Now you're happy if your starting pitcher goes 4 2/3 or 5 1/3. I would suggest that it would reflect, it would be a much more of a reflection and look much more like old time baseball. That's a topic for another day. That's another edition of the Recon.
I'm not going to pay him $40 million to get 7 innings out of him. Oh my God, Mueller, that is the end. You know, in the old days, I'd sit here and argue with you, but I'm just going to go eat now. He is Don Mueller. We're going to be at Fadley's. We're going to be at State Fair. All big thanks to our friends at Wise Markets for all of the wise conversations we're adding to our intelligent conversations around here. We're going to be out and upward and outward once I get this second shot next month. So make sure you are staying tuned. We talked a lot last week on the Recon about crab cakes and the crab cake tour. That is coming your way. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore Positive.